Let me start with a little bit of rebuttal. I did this the last time in the Drakensberg as well. I think he shouted at me, but it's okay. Aaron, where is he? He ran away. It's not here. So there were some negative, slightly negative comments made by him about the Democratic Alliance. And I do take exception to this, and I'll tell you why. There's one political party that has been fighting for the future of this country, for the history of our democratic history, as well as before that. There's no political party that has spent more money, more time, more effort, and more sacrifice ensuring that our constitutional democracy works. Stalwarts like Helen Ziller and many others who have given up literally blood, sweat, and tears to make sure that we can sit in a venue like this today and debate and discuss the important things that will move our country forward. So I do take exception from someone from the outside coming to criticize my political party having no blood, sweat, or tears in the game. And you know, Mr. Banks, it's easy to hide behind billions of pounds, but when the rest of us are on the ground, speaking to the poor, speaking to those who are desperate for a government that works, it is easy to call yourself a disruptor. It is easy to call yourself radical. The true radicals, the true disruptors are those who are trying to break the disruptive nature of poverty and inequality in our country. In a place where that is so diverse, with such a deep history of division, those are the true people who are trying to build a country. So please do not lecture us on how to build our own country. Rather focus on your own. You can put the timer on now. There are two versions of South Africa. The one we dream of, where businesses thrive, communities are safe, and young people have opportunities. And then there's the one that we wake up to every day, where millions are unemployed, crime is rampant, and basic services are failing. And the gap between these two South Africas is getting wider every day. The question that we have to ask ourselves is, what are we going to do about it? Now, Alec, I do appreciate that you mentioned my name a few times. But it is not me who has done these things, but myself and a bigger team called the Democratic Alliance, and I appreciate the effort of my team. But before I begin, and I've actually never had to speak at a forum like this with Helen listening as well, so I thought it was important that I add a disclaimer, Helen, is that I'm not speaking here today as a spokesperson of the Democratic Alliance. I'm here speaking to you as a young South African with hope for the future. My views, however controversial, are my own. For the most part, I consider myself an optimist, but as I grow older and I've found my first white hair in my beard the other day, and I've gained experience, I've started to shift to become more of a realist. The topic that I was asked to speak to today was South Africa's bright future, a view from KZN. My immediate reaction was to say, does South Africa truly have a bright future? This is a question that many of us wrestle with daily, just not occasionally. Can our country survive on its current trajectory? Can we see the fundamental policy reforms that we need to change the direction and create jobs and grow our economy? Can municipalities provide services not only effectively and efficiently, but constantly? Can we see water, sanitation, roads, and waste collection improved? Will our ports, railways, roads be equipped so that our industries that we so desperately need to grow and export thrive? Can our education system truly produce young people who can compete in the global market and shift towards become more entrepreneurial? And perhaps most importantly, will we ever feel safe walking in our own streets? These are not rhetorical questions. They are fundamental to the future of our country. And while none of us can answer them with any level of certainty, we still have to try and make sense of the noise, the changes, the challenges, and make decisions as best as we can. Unlike many of the speakers here today and over the last few days, whose work is undoubtedly important, I stand at the forefront of service delivery facing our nation's socioeconomic challenges head on every single day. For policymakers, lawmakers, and political commentators, whether they are in parliament, research institutes, or on primetime news channels, the realities of everyday South Africa is far removed from the conversations of the political elite and the class that surrounds them, journalists, commentators, and those whose wealth can influence political discourse. The stark and brutal reality of South Africa is far removed from their lived experience. However, South Africa is not defined by the voices that shout the loudest and by those who have the resources to amplify their voice to the widest audience, many of whom are more destructive than constructive. It is built by the millions of South Africans, ordinary in some ways and extraordinary in others, who wake up every day, often with uncertainty, building their homes and contributing to the well-being of their communities, saving for their old age and feeding their families. And whether we acknowledge it or not, I told you I'm going to be unpopular, whether we acknowledge it or not, the average South African is not sitting in this room today. But please don't take offense to that comment. Each one of you is very extraordinary, ordinary. I've only been given 20 minutes to speak, Alec. Otherwise, I would have shared with you the hundreds of stories that I've been privileged to collect over my time in office on campaign trails and as a public servant. But for the sake of time, I'm going to highlight the following. Here is the reality that we cannot ignore. Almost half of all South Africans are unemployed. That's that half of the room is unemployed. Our Gini coefficient is the worst in the world. That is the measure of inequality. That is the gap between the poorest and those who have the most. We are officially the worst in the world. 63% of our population live on less than 1,109 rand a month. 1,109 rand a month. How would you survive on that? That is almost 1.8 million people more than during COVID. Things have got worse. And sadly, 2.1 million households, or 6 million people, experience hunger every day, meaning they do not have sufficient food in their homes and at times go a day without a meal. These are four statistics that encapsulate the crisis that we face as a country: poverty, inequality, and unemployment. But Chris, you may say, we have heard this all before. Yes, you have. But repetition does not make it any less real. The fact that we have become desensitized to these figures is in itself part of the problem. So where does that leave us? Do we resign ourselves to a future dictated by these grim statistics, or do we refuse to accept them as the inevitable? The truth is that South Africa's future, our future, is unwritten. It is neither bright nor doomed. It is what we make of it. The people that I meet every day, small business owners struggling to stay afloat, young graduates desperate for opportunity, parents working multiple jobs to improve the lives of their children, they have not given up, and neither should the people sitting in this room. But change will not come from rhetoric. It will not come from wishful thinking or vague promises. It will come from practical, deliberate action. From demanding better governance, from holding leaders accountable, and for ensuring that competence, not connections, determines who gets to lead. Now, for those of you from the Western Cape, let me introduce you to a province called KwaZulu-Natal. In many ways, this province defines the complexities of South Africa. With 12.4 million people, it is the second most populous province and contributes around 16% to our national economy. It is home to Durban Container Port Terminal, which is the busiest in sub-Saharan Africa, and Richards Bay, which is one of the biggest bulk port terminals on the continent. It is a key player in agriculture, manufacturing, and chemicals. However, it has remained shackled by failing governance and infrastructure decline. But KZN is more than just numbers. It is a province of diverse heritage and deep political currents. IsiZulu, IsiXhosa, Afrikaner, English, Indian, and European influence have shaped the culture and the history of our province. Unlike Gauteng and the Western Cape, KZN is overwhelmingly rural, where millions of people live in traditional homesteads, fetching water from rivers or waiting for tankers days on end to deliver water, and rely on subsistence farming to put food on the table. In this province, the Zulu monarchy remains a powerful force, with Isilo Samabandla, His Majesty King MisiZulu kaZwelithini, and traditional leaders playing a very important role in governments in our province. It is also a violent province, where since 2011, 59 councillors have been murdered. These are not house breakings that have gone wrong. These are assassinations, possibly one of the most dangerous professions to be in KwaZulu-Natal. But it has always been a volatile province, and it has shifted hands at least three times since democracy was born. Once an ANC stronghold, and is the birthplace of the IFP, it has now become the home of Jacob Zuma's Umkhonto weSizwe party, or the MKP, which stormed onto the scene in 2024 and secured 45.3% of the vote in its first election, decimating the ANC from 54% to 17%. But while the MKP shook the national election, its by-election results tell a different story. Unlike Zuma's national prominence and appeal, local elections require candidates and strong ground structures, something the ANC, IFP, and DA have, and the MKP does not. Frequent leadership changes, disorganized structures, and incoherency strangle the MK party and suggest that its long-term dominance is far from certain. Meanwhile, the ANC has collapsed in KwaZulu-Natal. With its worst leadership ever, the loss of patronage networks, and the failure to mobilize, the ANC is now a 17% party in KwaZulu-Natal, worse than what they are here in the Western Cape, where they sit at 19%. And for those of you who know the history of the ANC in this province, they've got worse and worse and worse. The IFP, despite its legacy, has proven only marginally better than the ANC in government. Many of its municipalities remain plagued by corruption, patronage, and weak service delivery. With Mangosuthu Buthelezi's passing, a power struggle is brewing, particularly given the IFP's proximity to the monarchy. Against this backdrop, we have the DA, which has held its ground in the Zulu Kingdom. In fact, there are more black South Africans who vote for the DA in KwaZulu-Natal than vote for the EFF. Julius Malema can take that one and put it. The DA support is strongest along the N2 and N3 corridors, the former urban areas, and is consistent good governance where we do govern have earned us a position in the government of provincial unity with a critical treasury position and infrastructure and public works position. KZN has everything that it needs to become an economic powerhouse of this country. Major trade routes, significant ports, rich resources, yet it remains held back mainly by collapsing municipalities unable to provide roads, water, and electricity that are so vital for growth. The biggest culprit? Corruption, cater deployment, and bad governance. Words that we've become accustomed to. So no matter how hopeful we are, without significant change to how municipalities are governed in our province, we will continue to see KZN underperform, with activity being increasingly concentrated in a few nodes. But despite all these problems that I've mentioned, we do see remarkable investment and development potential. Clear signs that some people do believe in KwaZulu-Natal's future. 28.4 billion rand into the N2, N3 corridor upgrades, which will boost transport and logistics. The international market investing 2 billion rand in new Club Med on the north coast. A 30 billion rand new city, which is taking shape, called West Town on the outskirts of Durban. SAPI has committed 10.8 billion rand to expanding its operations, showing that KZN will continue to be an important player in forestry and paper. The port of Durban, Transnet, has recently taken delivery of a number of pieces of equipment to boost inefficiencies, and a number of wharfs are being expanded to make sure that they boost capacity and efficiency there. King Shaka International Airport, built for the 2010 World Cup, continues to increase global connectivity, with direct flights from Qatar, Emirates, and Turkish Airlines now featuring daily. Water security, a fundamental pillar of economic growth, is also receiving attention. The recently completed Spring Grove Dam and the now-started Umkhomazi Dam will ensure more reliable water supply to our economic hubs and population centers. But the question remains. The question that must be answered: how do we fix local government? How do we ensure that services are delivered? How do we ensure that our towns and villages are not just sustainable, but thrive financially and become centers of opportunity? These are the challenges that we have to confront in building a KwaZulu-Natal of the future. Now, I could leave my speech here, because I've painted quite a grim picture, haven't I? But I'm not going to do that, because like I said, I do not believe in despair. I believe that within these crises lies opportunity. Our country does not lack potential. What it lacks is leadership. And within all of this, the need and will to reform. The problems that we face are not unsolvable. In fact, we have seen glimpses of hope and possibility where there is political will and competency in government. In the Umgeni municipality where I lead, and I believe there's a corner over there with some Nottingham Road residents. Yeah, there they are. In just 3 years, we've managed to make significant strides and inspire hope that local government can be fixed. In Cape Town, Mayor Jordan Hill Lewis is leading a world-class city, tackling head-on the global challenges associated with rapid urbanization. The Western Cape government continues to shine and outshine. And more recently, we have seen certain ministries at a national level begin to show very early signs of positive movements forward. Now, what does good governance get you? So in the Umgeni municipality, as a very, very small example, we are now a debt-free municipality. We do not have any loans, owe money to no one. Is Dan still here? Dan's not here. We are debt-free to Eskom, whereas our neighbours in Pietermaritzburg and Sunduzi owe 800 million rand. That's the capital of our province. We have managed to secure and identify our 1.3 billion rands worth of assets. We never had an asset register. We now have one of those. We've tripled our roads budget and committed 180 million rand towards infrastructure over the next 3 years. Outside of the metro, that is Durban with a population of 6 million people, we have the most number of development applications, town planning, building inspectorate, rezoning, etc., showing that where there's good governance, people invest their money. Property values, on average, have increased between 30 and 110%, meaning that if you buy a property in Umgeni, you will... Who was arguing about assets earlier? If you buy a property in Umgeni, your asset will appreciate. We offer the highest basket of free basic services in the entire province. So despite being called anti-poor, that being the DA, we offer the most free basic services for our communities. Under an ANC-led government, there were 133 households who received free basic services. Under a DA-led government, there are over 3,500 households who get assistance from government every month at no expense to the ratepayer. And we have seen people returning to visit us. In 2021, when I took government, there was an average of 1,500 tourists visiting our iconic Howick Falls. This December, we saw 9,500 tourists visit that site, with 2,500 of being from foreign shores. So we are encouraging people to come and visit. So South Africa, this future does not have to be written by crises. It just requires a radical shift in the way things are done today. It means prioritizing infrastructure, cutting through the red tape to make business growth easy, strengthening our institutions of accountability, and electing leaders who will put service before self-interest. I want to close off with a significant moment for me from this past weekend. It was a typical, beautiful summer's afternoon in the KwaZulu-Natal Midlands. Warm, sunny, tranquil. As I teed up my ball, yes, Helen, I do take breaks sometimes. As I teed up my ball, preparing for what was certainly going to be the most spectacular shot of my golfing history, perhaps 250 meters if I'm being modest, I heard a sound. It was familiar, but for a moment, I couldn't quite place it. As the sound grew louder, I felt a faint vibration under my feet. Both of these sensations were stirring distant memories from about a decade or more ago. And then I saw it, the unmistakable blue and orange of the Transnet locomotive. In the distance, its horn echoed through the valley. And as the train passed, the noise from the locomotive faded into the rhythmic clatter of the coaches, one after another, carrying containers, liquid cargo, bulk goods, and even wheels for future trains. It has been a few years since I had seen this train or any significant movement of freight along this route. Once upon a time, this railway line between Johannesburg and Durban saw 80 to 100 trains a day. Today, if we see 10, it is considered a good day. Yet, not so long ago, equally, this line had fallen completely silent. In the grand scheme of things, this might seem like a small moment. But to me, it was powerful. It was a symbol, a proof that broken systems can be repaired. That what once was broken can work again. That even a country where decay seems to be inevitable, renewal is still possible. At this moment, Alec, with a minute left, I must be a disciplined cadre, as the comrades would say, and say that this would not be possible, specifically in our municipality, if those 42 senior citizens who did not come out and commit to voting for a government that would bring about real change. So I'm asking you to support a political party, whether with your checkbook or with your time and effort, to bring about that real change. Now that that interlude is over. Despite all the challenges that we face, I still believe in this country's future and that the best days can still be ahead of us. But we have to fight for them. We must remember that history does not move in straight lines. It is shaped by those who refuse to sit back and watch. South Africa is not beyond saving. It is simply waiting for those with the courage to act. So the question then is not whether or not South Africa has a bright future. The question rather is, what will you do to make it a bright future? Thank you.
Thank you, Chris. You certainly did not disappoint, as anticipated. Something that I'd like to start with is this theme of courage that's gone through as a thread through pretty much the whole conference so far. And you mentioned 59 councillors had been murdered, including someone very close to you. What's happened there? Have the perpetrators been arrested?
So in Nhlali Enza's case, Nhlali Enza was one of my best friends and my chief whip, who was murdered not so long ago for doing what, can you hear me at the back? For doing what he was elected to do. And if it wasn't for the work of the Democratic Alliance and gratefully the work of AfriForum, who have assisted with this, there would have been no progress made. It does not make sense to have a task team for political killings that reports directly to a politician. So in the case of political killings, the task team, the police, report directly to the president, who himself is a politician. So it does not make sense that if you're trying to solve, and many of these cases go unsolved, it does not make sense to have a politician in charge of political killings. It's just there's a conflict of interest there. But two people have been arrested, and I was contacted by the prosecuting team this week. A third arrest is imminent. We have all the information of who killed Nhlali Enza, but the police refuse to meet with our lawyer is Harry Null. The police refuse to meet with him to get this information to be able to take it forward.
No. The police refused to meet with Harry Null to get the evidence. What is that telling you?
It's a General Khumalo. General Khumalo, who sits at a national level, refuses to meet with the legal team that is assigned by the DA and with the assistance of AfriForum. They refused to meet with him to collect evidence. In fact, the police have not met with the family of the deceased since they took a statement from her. Because we said to her, on advice, do not meet with the police without lawyers, the lawyers being the team that we've assigned. So the police have not met with the family for over 2 years, but yet they claim that they are making progress.
And he was a counselor.
He was a counselor. The first political party that he ever joined was the Democratic Alliance from many years ago when it was unpopular for black people to do so. Fought and grew the DA in the Mpofana area, that's Mooi River, became a councillor and my chief whip in the Mgeni municipality, and was fighting against an Induna. His name is Mr. Buthelezi. I don't mince my words. Mr. Buthelezi, who is currently on the run from the police, who was selling government land illegally, stole Eskom transformers, lied to people that he would install electricity for them. And when Ntale Yenza brought this to my attention, they killed him.
There's so many unsung heroes. Listening a little earlier to Dan Morikani reminded me of the chief coal engineer at Eskom, who also he died because he did his job. I had a guy who worked with me at the SABC called Calvin Tosango, who died because he was doing his job during the elections in 94. I hope one day there's some statues raised to these incredible souls who have gone way beyond the call of duty, because most citizens don't think in the way that true public servants do, that you are serving. And I think that came through very strongly in our talk. But something I'd love you to share with us is you were the candidate for premier for KZN. There is a government of national unity. You are one of the stars in the party. There's a place for you, I'm sure. Maybe not sure, but in government, there's certainly a place for you in KZN. Why go back to Howick?
There's a few reasons, Alec, but I think the most compelling one for me is, and I'll probably get in trouble for saying this, but it's okay. National and provincial government for me are a waste. The place where people's lives are changed is at local government. That is, many people don't know who their minister or their MEC is. When there's problems, they don't phone them up. They message their local councillor. They try to get hold of their mayor. Whether it's, I mean, I'm supposed to be solving SANDF problems. The post office now reports to me, SASA. I mean, all these things that are national government competencies. People come to us to look for assistance. So for me, I started doing this because I wanted to make a difference in people's lives. And the biggest difference in people's lives you can make is at local government. So that is the biggest reason. And obviously, you know, to be part of a government and provincial unity where you have 14% of the vote and you're reliant on others to help you make decisions, when you have the power to effect real change, you have to weigh that up against each other. So I decided to finish my 5-year term, like I'd promised the people of my municipality, and to effect real change as opposed to negotiate change. I'm a very impatient person, so it was probably for the better.
You said 42? Was it 42 difference in your votes?
42 votes. 42 votes was the difference between an ANC government for 5 years and a DA government for 5 years. So every vote counts. Every vote counts.
And many of those who voted for you were from the Ambers. And the Ambers is known to not have an infant or a primary school.
You're allowed to say that.
Chris, what about the next local election? How... do you have any polling? Do you have any understanding? Do you have any thought? Because if you've worked so damn hard for 5 years and the elections come along next year and you lose, the DA loses the municipality, I'm sure that would be, it would make even an optimist like you despondent. What is it looking like?
So yes, we did actually recently we did some polling to see where we were post the 2024 national elections, and things are looking good. Why I say that is the old rhetoric that our opponents used to go out there and spread. The DA is going to bring back apartheid. The DA is going to take away your grant. The DA is going to steal your RDP house. They can't use that anymore because it's not true. So it becomes very difficult for them to change their paradigm and the way that they campaign when the DA is actually doing better than what they are doing. So, and it is looking good. We grew by 2,500 votes in the 2024 general elections. So in real terms, not in percentage, we found an extra 2,500 votes in 4 out of the 5 township wards. We grew in real terms, not just in percentage. And in the farming communities, in the small farming villages, we have grown there as well. So I'm confident that we will retain the municipality. Worst case scenario, we'll need a one seat party to go into a coalition with.
What about your next door neighbors? Some Doozy or Peter Maritzburg is a, I don't know if there's a bigger disaster in South Africa. There probably is, but that's a huge disaster. And Mpofana, Mooi River, is probably worse or at least on a par. Are you able to find, is there a way that you could have some kind of a result for the DA in those two municipalities?
So in Mpofana, not so much. We maintained the same sort of results over the years there. The population is really declined in that municipality. Anyone who can understand, believe, and pack our policies as an organization has moved to our municipality or to the Western Cape. Msunduzi is a little bit different. Msunduzi can still be saved, but it's going to require a lot of money. But the nice thing is that we don't have to point to the Western Cape anymore. We don't have to say, well, look how lekker Hermanus is. Look at Oeverstrand. Like it's lekker there. People don't know where that is when you're in KZN. But we can say, look at Umgeni, look at Hilton up the road. And you made an example. The road is called Old Howick Road. I did it on purpose. I saw a what is it, a graphic floating around. I think it was Steenhuisen standing between the Eastern Cape and the Western Cape. I said, we're going to do that as well. So you are quite right. But yes, Msunduzi has got huge problems. They failed to submit audited financials. The Auditor General has lambasted them. They're 800 million rand in debt to Eskom, and I think a 400 million rand to Umgeni to Tugela Water. So 1.2 billion before you even get anywhere with that municipality. But it is savable.
With the government of provincial unity, are they looking at, and I know it's the second time I'm really taking a bit of personal license here, but are they looking at Newcastle? And I'll tell you why. I grew up in Newcastle when ArcelorMittal's predecessor, Isco, was being built. And it went from a sleepy little town into a significant sized mini city. Talking to Azar Jameen from Econometrics, who've done the numbers, when the ArcelorMittal steel plant closes, the knock-on effect is 80,000 jobs. 80,000 jobs. I couldn't believe the number because it's 3,500 who work at the plant, but the knock-on effect. And Azar said to me, and he's a pretty sensible guy. I put this to him. I said, I remember Newcastle when it was first built. And we went from this tiny little town until something substantial. Will it go back? Like when you don't look after a plot of land, nature recaptures it. And he said, absolutely, that's the case. Is there anything that the government of provincial unity can do? Because if that disaster were to befall the area, it has to have huge knock-on effects.
Alec, I think I should ask you that question. As a staunch capitalist, what happens when a business is no longer financially viable?
Well, if government has interfered to make it no longer financially viable, then government needs to change its approach. Because in this case, from what Azar tells me, is that we have got certain elite black industrialists who are benefiting hugely from a changing in the rules, which has benefited them and disadvantaged the steel plant.
I'm glad you answered that way. Many of those beneficiaries sit at national government. They sit at the Department of Energy. They sit in Mr. Ramaphosa's cabinet, and those are the beneficiaries of these decisions. So can the provincial government do much about it? No, they can't. But can the people who are benefiting from this do something about it? Absolutely. Do they want to? No, they don't.
Yeah, we've got a challenge, but I guess one step at a time, and which is exactly what you've been doing there. Just tell us a little more about property prices. I love this story because when we went to go and open BizNews in the UK, we could not believe the property prices. There was a house which in South Africa would go for probably 4 million rand that was selling for 1.3 million pounds, 26, 27 million rand. And the only sense I could make of it was the governance, the difference in the governance between South Africa and the UK. Now, the governance in your municipality has been reflected, as you shared with us, in house prices. Over what period have you seen those increases?
So that is over a 3.5 year period. Maybe if I can use my property as an example. So I bought a second property in the municipality, you know, as a commitment to myself to say that I want this to be an investment. I bought it at 2 million rand and got it revalued 3 months ago at 3 million rand. And that was a year and a half later. But what that shows is that there's a desperate need for places that work. And it comes down to the market. If there are fewer and fewer places that work, the prices of those places that do work get higher and higher. And that's why the city of Cape Town currently has a problem with property prices, because many people around the country are going there because it works. And that's the challenge that we have to deal with as municipalities. How do you make affordable housing, and I'm not talking about just low-cost housing, affordable housing, new market entrance, in a way that is sustainable, because you have to put the infrastructure. But yeah, the long and the short of it is when you have fewer and fewer areas able to sustain proper human existence, then those places that can will become more and more expensive, further creating inequality in our society.
I suppose we're sitting in the epicenter of that argument with Dr. Rabi and the work that she's done here. Hermanus' house prices are probably on a par with the increase that you're seeing in Howick as well. Let's go to some questions now, Chris. Derek Martin says, how about free transport for pensioners to Mgeni on election day 2026?
We already do that.
What else?
It comes with those annoying phone calls that Helen was talking about.
Why do you have those annoying phone calls? I mean, what's the purpose of it?
Well, if we didn't phone, Helen's getting excited here. Well, if we didn't phone you 14 times, then we might not have got those 42 people out to vote. If we didn't phone you 14 times, we might not have 89 seats in Parliament. We might have 50 seats in Parliament, giving others an opportunity to be leading parties there. So at the end of the day, it's not because we want to annoy you. It's because the culture of voting in South Africa has slowly declined, where we have to annoy you to go and vote. In other countries, people want to go and vote because they want to exercise their power to choose their government. We're just giving you a gentle reminder to say, go and choose your government of the day.
Not so gentle. George Mayrung says, question for Mr. Pappas. Maletsi Mbeki challenged the DA to appeal to ex-ANC voters. It seems that you have the answer, but how can you assist the national DA team with the message?
A lot of people, thanks for the question. A lot of people say that. They say, well, go appeal to ex-ANC voters. I think the important thing is to appeal to voters who align with your vision, who align with your policies, who align with your principles. It is really easy for a political party like the ACDP or the PA or any of these or these pop-up parties that come along every election to get up and stand on one point and be extremely populist on that and then fade away at the end of an election. The DA is consistent in what we stand for. And we're not going to win the votes of 60 million South Africans. What we want to do is change the mindset of more and more South Africans towards every election so that they see the DA vision and believe in it. Because what we don't want to do is destroy ourselves from the inside out, which very nearly happened a couple of years ago. So do we want more ANC voters to come and vote for us? Yes. But we want the ANC voters who believe in our vision, who are not going to try and force us to be a different version of the ANC, or a different version of the MK, or a different version of the EFF.
Do you get a sense that that's happening? And I ask you because that SRF report was really quite earth-shattering in many ways for the ANC to go down to 32%. And as mentioned earlier, when I spoke with the researcher, he said that there was a feeling amongst the 15% who were staunch previously, who have now up for grabs, that there was going to be violence when the ANC went below 50%. Now they see the sky hasn't fallen, so they actually are considering their options. Are you seeing that on the ground, that perhaps some of those who would never have considered voting for you are thinking about it?
Absolutely. More so amongst voters who realize what good governance does for them. So whether it is the black middle class or the emerging black middle class, people moving into previous white suburbs, buying their first property, joining the formal market. We have two markets. We have two economies in South Africa, the informal and the formal. The formal sitting amongst us, the informal where we actually don't know what's happening much of the time. But the formal economy, as people, more and more people participate in that, they realize how much government's decisions impact their lives and what policy and what politicians say has an impact on those lives. So in a small municipality, for example, when someone moves out of a township and buys their first property in a previously white suburb, and they see, oh, okay, I'm paying rates and taxes now, and that's not being stolen, and there's no controversy in my municipality, the road's being fixed, the street light works, they pick up my litter every day, there is a correlation between good governance and votes. And that's where we see our biggest growth. I'm talking from my municipality perspective, is amongst those who start to put together the dots between good governance and their vote.
Sizwe Mdluli says, great speech, Chris. Your love and passion for making a great place is astonishing to witness. Clap, clap, clap. I would like to know what is causing delays to the commissioning of Mpofu-Mani's WWTW upgrade projects.
Wastewater treatment facility. So that it's actually, it was commissioned by the Mgungundlovu District Municipality, which is essentially a failed entity. They then, after failing to implement it, handed it over to the Umgeni Utugela Water, and the commissioning is set for, I think, April, May, June this year. So it's a 2.5-year delay. It's not run by my municipality, but it is set to be commissioned in the next 2.5 months. They're busy testing it at the moment, getting the bacteria right in the systems.
Lisa Schert says, I see your Facebook posts and the extraordinary number of comments that follow. Do you believe that you're a popular mayor for all of the people in Umgeni?
I am a mayor for all the people of Umgeni. Whether I'm popular or not, you can ask different people. I know the people in Nottingham Road are upset with me about their rates at the moment. Sometimes the people in Mpofu-Mani are unhappy because of electricity disconnection. So just depending on the flavor of the day, I'm popular and unpopular depending where you go. But I guess that's the nature of public service.
Derek Martin wants to know, what will happen to the ANC and MK in the KZN local government elections in 2026?
So, yeah. They have a lot of people who claim to be leaders, a lot of people who claim to have influence in the communities, many of them disgruntled ANC members. Either they weren't able to grow in the organization, or because of the type of patronage that exists within that party that blocks people from growing, they've now joined the MK party. So it's hard to say, but one thing I do know is that the local government elections in KZN in 2026-7 are going to be brutal. Many of the people who stand in councillors, the thousands of people in the province, don't have any other source of income. It's become a job and a source of income as opposed to a calling and a service. And with more competition and fewer resources, people get more desperate to retain their positions. And the biggest competition is not the IFP and the ANC, or the IFP and the MK. It's the ANC and the MK, because they're eating each other's votes. I can't answer that question directly, but there's going to be huge competition between the MK and the ANC to a point where we do need to keep a close eye on the security of those people, not of the province, not of instability and riots, but of those particular individuals who are putting their names up to stand for candidates in those parties.
Alban Atkinson says, in the We Buy Cars session, Faan van der Walt said that the regulations in the Western Cape are so intense that it has taken them over 12 months to get approval to build a new car warehouse. In our business, we have waited 6 months for permission to occupy more space in the building we rent. Is the DA not regulating too much?
No, I think we are quite clear on what we stand for in terms of the removal of red tape. That is one of the things we have to do as a country, from national to local, to be able to make things, to grow the economy. Labor law reform, removal of red tape, making things cheaper. What does end up happening, and I was actually talking to someone at the back earlier, is that your systems become so bureaucratic and are usually so bloated that it's usually some low-level government official that holds something up. And as a mayor, and Unli will know, you can't be everywhere all at once. So you have to continuously improve your systems to be able to remove those blockages. But if there are challenges, I'm happy to give my number and put you in contact with the relevant mayor or the relevant person here. But yes, there are those challenges, the systematic challenges that have persisted for a long time in government and are really, really difficult to break. One, because public servants don't change, municipal officials, government officials don't change easily. But secondly, our systems are outdated generally. Many of these things could be done online faster, quicker, more efficiently and effectively.
Jenny J says, congrats on all you've achieved in Mgeni. How important has your ability to speak Zulu been in the success?
I would be lying if I said it's not important. I think the importance of it is being able to listen empathetically. And to be able to respond without a barrier to trust. And by that, I mean a translator. So I think it has helped me tremendously. By virtue of the fact that my skin is white, there is already a trust barrier between myself and someone who is not white. But language helps to break that trust barrier.
How many other DA young wolves speak more than just the white languages?
There are many. Who was I chatting to the other day? The mayor of Midvall. I'm not sure if is 40 considered young. I don't want to get in trouble. Is 40
young? Is young.
Okay, 40 is young.
In this community, yeah.
Okay, so the mayor of Midvall speaks four or five different languages: Sotho, Afrikaans, English, a bit of Zulu, and you know. So there's a number of people who do speak multiple languages. I mean. And also it works both ways, right? So, you know, we say, wow, look, there's a white guy who can speak Zulu. But also there are black members of the DA who speak English and Afrikaans. And that is equally breaking down the barriers that we have in our country around trust.
Applauded from Zipo Buthelezi, who's from Shark Country. He says, excellent speech from Chris. Skin in the game, and Mgeni is ripping dividends left, right, and center. And Ryan the Lion says, Chris, what's your view on eThekwini rates on unoccupied land, which is in the region of 9 times what rates are in the Overberg municipality, i.e. here?
So generally as a city, eThekwini is way overpriced. Their rates are the highest in any of the metros in the country. I understand the concept of adding additional rates to vacant properties to try and get them developed, specifically in areas where there is a shortage of land. But eThekwini takes that to the next level and is fleecing residents on many things, water, electricity, and rates. And I know that the communities in those areas are constantly taking that city to court and are very, very well organized in fighting so. So I don't think it's fair. But I do understand the concept of trying to force development in highly densified areas.
This is quite an appropriate question to end off with because of the experiences we've had here. It comes from Simon Ellis. He says, Chris, do you fear for your life given what happened? And what are you doing about it to stay safe? We need your leadership to continue to do all the amazing things that you're doing.
I went to school with Simon, so you should have added that to the message. Thanks, Simon. I didn't know you cared about me so much. Yeah, no, I don't. If I'm cautious. I have a driver bodyguard. I would be naive not to have one in KZN out of all places. But I joke with him. I say, if I'm dead, I won't know. So it doesn't really matter. But yeah, I think just don't do stupid things. You know, I've got to live my life at the end of the day, and I'm amongst the people that elected me and the people that I call my community. If someone is going to kill me or someone's going to hurt me, it's not going to be at Spar or at the municipality. It's going to be when I'm at the gate of my house or when they've carefully planned my route. So I think it's just about being aware of the circumstances that you live in, the circumstances that are operating within the province. But yeah, it's jokingly, but if I'm dead, I'm dead. I won't know.
Well, Chris, it's nice to have you back again, and I'm sure we're going to have you back in, of course we're going to have you back in future, but I'd like to know, let's say 3 years' time, 3 years' time, the local election's done, DA's won again in Mgeni, things are looking better in the municipality, you're like a CEO who's now achieved the challenge. What's next?
So, are there any vacancies in any of the big corporations? I'm really good at stakeholder management, public relations, can be a political
Don't say that in
analyst.
front of your boss.
She was quizzing me earlier. No, I'm joking. No, Alec, I study town and regional planning. I am committed to making South Africa a better place. Politics is obviously one way to do it. Governance is a different way. Inside government, NPOs are another way. And I think there's value in my skill set within the DA, in government, in an NPO that does the same thing, in civil society. I'm not leaving public service, but at some stage I will have to say I've done my, at that stage it'll be 15 years in politics, and start to think about the future.
Well, may that date be postponed for a long time in the future, because you sometimes don't realize the example that you set is being watched by many, many people who you are unaware of. And more strength to you, more strength to Mgeni, and thank you for the work that you do, Chris Pappas.
Thank you.
Right now, you can get the cheapest Forex rate around, right here, on Shift. Pay less for your dollars, pounds, and euros here. And get to shop more here. And do more here. And enjoy more ooh-la-la here. Shift also lets you trade and transfer currencies and buy shares in the world's best companies. It all happens right here, on Shift. You won't find a cheaper Forex rate anywhere else, no matter where you bank. Download the Shift app today.
Thank you. In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
Downings is South Africa's leading marquee infrastructure company, proudly celebrating 25 years of excellence. Renowned for creativity, innovation, and unmatched technical expertise, our event marquees and semi-permanent structures elevate any project with style and sophistication. Whether it's a corporate event or a commercial project, we tailor every structure to meet your needs with world-class precision. Visit downings.co.za to consult with our expert team. Downings, your trusted marquee specialists nationwide.